This is Diva Marie Gregory. Welcome to Corpse Run Radio.
Children of the grave, heed my call. Come and join me or feel my wrath. For we are the Forsaken. I am your queen, and this is Corpse Run Radio.
This is Corpse Run Radio.
We are the Forsaken.
The Forsaken.
Take it old school. Let's go.
Ooh, boy, it's Lash 2. Talking like you're some brand new. But they don't make you like they used to. But you can heal me all day.
Uh-huh.
Ooh, boy, it's Trey Chat. How long since you were sub last? The way you're shouting, where's my talents? And I know we're gonna play.
I wanna take it through Black Rock. And we can run it through Max. Donovanic Sea's room, get quarantined. The wrong expect. You wanna recap? I think it's the same. Turn back the clock on this whole game. Call it your name. Bring it in the right brain tactic. Baby, you're so classic. Baby, you're so classic. Baby, you. Baby, you're so classic.
Ooh, I'll invite ya. Dungeon views will excite ya. LFG instead of slash 3. Nothing ever stays the same.
No, they don't.
You're a paladin healing in holy. I'm a blood decay throwing AoE. And it's dungeon 3 cause my threat's easy. Get you back into the game.
I wanna take it through Black Rock
Mountain.
And we can run it through Nats. Dotemonic Sea's room. Get quarantined. But we're in the wrong X-Pack. You wanna recap? I think it's the same. Turn back the clock on this whole game. In my hall of fame. Everything is so throwback-ish. I kinda like it, like you're wearing tier 3. Old school chic, 51 talents and Captain 60. Call in your name, bring it in the right brain tactic. Baby, you're so plastic.
Yeah.
Baby, you're so plastic.
Talent trees, baby, please. Let's take it back to class.
So classic.
Let's take it on back. Let's take it to the start. Back to the game that once stole my heart. When mounts in the 40s, plague lands in the 50s. Can't wait till I cap out of 60. You with me? Playing with no X-Facts. I'm raiding through max way before rap. MC Black Queen AQCG right before the past changed it. Take me back to classic.
Turn back the clock. Call this whole game in my hall of fame. Everything is so throwback. Like you're wearing tier 3, old school chic, 51 talents and Captain 60. Calling your name, bringing in the right beat tactic. Baby, you're so classic.
The real question is, do you consider yourself a law or a lawbringer?
Hello and welcome to episode 48 of Corpse Run Radio. My name is Grant Nagus. I'm so excited today. Yesterday, we finally had the beta testing start for World of Warcraft Classic, and I watched a couple of streamers play through the very beginnings, and oh my god, the feels. It's really something that I hadn't expected to hit me that hard. As hard as it did. I watched someone play through Elwynn and a tiny fraction of Westfall, and I watched someone play through Tearsfall Glades and then go into Visit the Dark Lady. I must say, the feels with the entire game was so strong, but obviously the reasons why I felt the way I did when I watched someone play through Tearsfall Glades and then go into Undercity is a given. Though I must say, for me, it is a double-edged sword. Since we got so used to the way the Dark Lady looks nowadays and the way she sounds. They used the old sound files, obviously. So the voice actress that does the voice of Sylvanas isn't Patty Matson. That being said, it's a thing we have to live with all the other changes or non-changes that they made, the decisions that they made to not change it and not to update it. Overall, I think it's valid that they didn't do it, but still, yeah, with a subject as dear to my heart as the newer version of the Dark Lady is, it's difficult to mentally attune yourself, so to speak, to the old version, especially the model, the first model in the black robe, the night elf model, because let's be honest.
I've been a high elf, a banshee, and an undead high elf, but I've never been a night elf. I don't do bouncy.
So there is that. It's stuff that obviously they didn't care too much about it. They didn't want to create a new model for her. I don't know why, because she looked quite different in Warcraft 3, so they could have made a unique model for her. Not sure why. Regardless, I am so stoked about us finally being able to play World of Warcraft Classic. Not me yet, but Blizzard, if any one of you listens to this, send a access thingy my way, please. I would really like to play the World of Warcraft Classic beta. That being said, I look forward to visiting Orgrimmar, the old Orgrimmar, the single level one, not the up top stuff. I mean, we got used to it, sure, but it always felt a unnecessary add-on. The lair on top where the flight points are in retail, and the towers are the Zeppelin towers and all that. I really look forward to and the old architecture, the non-fortified gates and all that. I really look forward to visiting that again. So, and there are so many more things I'm going to mention, I'm going to talk about over the next weeks until the game launches on August the 27th. So sadly we have quite a while to go, but yeah, I just wanted to give you guys an insight into my feelings at the moment. I think many of you feel the same way. I so look forward to it. Today we have a new contributor. I wanted to quickly introduce him. His name is Soul So Breezy. He's a YouTube and Twitch contributor. I visited his Twitch stream a couple of weeks ago and asked him if he would use content, since really does great content. And he said, yep, go ahead. And this episode will be the first time that we have some of his content in our show. The clip is called Awesome WoW Classic Feature That Won't Work in Retail, where he, so breezy that is, explains the difference between sharding and layering and cross-realm zones, all that technical stuff that is being used in retail, which is a term, apparently, that we need to get used to now. And the tech that they are going to use in Classic. So I won't talk more about that. Let him do the explaining. Also, we have Hazel with her new 8.2 mounts and where to get them. We have Hero Maradex's negative stats in vanilla WoW and why they're gone. We have Charm's Tales of the Loa Zandalar song. And we have Noble 87's The Story of Kern Bloodhoof. And the first song you heard was Silver Latomi and Kavo with their song Classic. We don't want to forget that. Sit down and enjoy an hour or so with The Forsaken, and I hope to see you in episode 49.
Hello, it's Sol with another video. And if you haven't heard already, Classic WoW is coming on August 27th. Not only that, though, the Classic WoW beta will be starting very, very shortly. In fact, by the time you watch this video, it might have already started and you might have gotten an invite. So I would advise you very strongly, double check your clients, your Battle.net client, that is, and see if you got an invite there. You'll know because you'll just be able to select the game and start downloading it right away. Otherwise, try to avoid emails and other people that are trying to tell you, hey, I got a beta key, just give me all your information and then I'll give it to you. Now, don't do that, okay? Along with these announcements came some information on how Classic WoW is going to handle what is no doubt going to be a very large influx of people who are interested in seeing what the heck this game is all about. To protect against overpopulation, Classic WoW and Blizzard Entertainment are introducing a kind of sort of new tech called layering. It's tech that's very similar to sharding, but it's redesigned to suit the values of what Classic WoW is all about. I'm going to explain what that is, and what it's going to mean for your Classic WoW experience, and then explore some possibilities with this new concept. First though, let's recap on the technology that powers this modern WoW outdoor experience. Sharding. Sharding affects each zone individually, and it controls the player population in two ways. One is in case a zone is overpopulated with players from the same realm. What sharding will do is split players up into separate shards or instances of the zone. This is to help alleviate overcrowdedness, so you don't have crowds of players that are camping the same quest objectives, for example, causing bottlenecks and basically messing with the experience. The other purpose of sharding is to populate otherwise empty zones with players from multiple realms who happen to be in that zone. You might be the only person in Red Ridge Mountains leveling in your realm, for example, but there might be others doing the same thing on their realms. With sharding, now you can kind of sort of do this together. Sharding, or cross-realm zones, or whatever you want to call it, has been a staple of WoW for a good number of years already. So if I were to sum up, very generally, this whole general consensus about sharding, I would say that this technology helped to really smooth out the overall World of Warcraft experience, but at the cost of realm identity, basically. But we're not here to talk about sharding, we're here to talk about layering. Layering is very similar to sharding, but instead of it applying to individual zones, layering affects the entire game world as if it were a single shard. Layering is only designed to distribute overpopulated realms and not bring players from other realms together because, well, cross-realm isn't going to be a thing in Classic WoW. Layering only affects your realm. This technology comes into effect when you log in into an overpopulated realm. What happens is that you're thrown onto a layer and you stay there, even if you happen to move between zones. The only way to move to a different layer is when you join a group, and then the group can see each other. Adding to that, layering is only meant to be a temporary solution for high realm populations during Classic WoW's early days. As the initial rush dies down and the number of active players decrease, theoretically it will, Blizzard is going to turn off layering, and will do this no later than when Classic WoW launches Phase 2 of its content rollout. So a while back, I released a series of videos citing my concerns about Classic WoW, namely on this topic of how to handle overpopulation. Today's WoW is the result of how Blizzard handled a massive population with what it had available at the time, which was namely to add hundreds of realms. The result today is a very fragmented population, a collection of realms from the constantly full to the desolate, even after multiple realm merges. On top of that are systems like sharding, a system that has its benefits, but hey, just my opinion, it's just too much of the invisible hand messing with players. My specific concern was that Blizzard would end up repeating history with Classic WoW, or worse, they would use technology like sharding to control the population but otherwise compromise what makes Classic WoW, Classic WoW. So my reaction to this is, it's pretty darn positive. I like the idea because this suits the sort of small town feel of Classic WoW. The values of realm identity are pretty much preserved, but at the same time, layering is very mindful of the long-term health of the game. In the event that the launch happens to exceed everybody's expectations, including mine, instead of launching like a dozen more realms to help suit that higher population, Blizzard only needs to add like one. Maybe. I mean, keep in mind that that's just an example with absolutely no basis on the numbers. I've been reading around, and others have been also very responsive to the idea of layering, and on top of that have thought, hey, can this be added to today's WoW, as well as eliminating sharding altogether? No. At least that's what I think right now. I'm gonna share my thoughts on how I thought layering could possibly be implemented in modern WoW, and how I came to that conclusion. First off, layering is only designed to split players when a realm is overcrowded, and there are only a handful of those realm types. In that scenario, the purpose of layering only serves a few high pop realms, while the remaining realms get nothing. So the next idea was to aggressively merge realms to create a similar makeup to Classic WoW. Now, I know that there's a lot of logistics with merging realms along with its many characters and economies, but let's put that aside for a moment and just imagine dozens of realms all of a sudden are merged together. So when the population is very high, like during an expansion launch, the realm will create a layer and it'll split players. It sounds good at first, but here's a crappy diagram to help illustrate my skepticism for this whole idea. So here's Classic WoW. Each of the icons here represents part of the population. With layers, theoretically the players will be split across multiple layers until the layers are no longer needed and the remaining players are merged. Now here's modern WoW and its population, but this isn't really an accurate picture of modern WoW. In fact, this is modern WoW, from the base game to each of its many expansions and the continents that make up its world. By the nature of how the World of Warcraft operates, the vast majority of players will exist in this portion of the game, the latest stuff. The rest of the population is split across the various continents. So in the event of overpopulation, a layer will be set down and populations will be at least temporarily split. The challenge, though, is how should the players be split? Should they be split down the middle? Maybe the players in current content should be split while the others stay on another layer. Maybe because the overpopulation is participating in just current content, only that population should be subject to layers while the rest are... Okay, well, then we don't have layers, we just have two big shards. But does that really matter in the long term, because this sort of design is supposed to be temporary? And then after that's done, is there anything to be done about when eventually realm populations dwindle more? Then in that case, how would population be redistributed once again without the use of sharding technology? The point is that somewhere in this whole mess is an answer, but then you gotta ask yourself again, what is it that you're trying to accomplish here again? Trying to solve the issues of distributing realm population, it starts off simple, but then it suddenly cascades into a series of solutions that just create even more problems to solve. And despite your well-meaning and everything, you've given yourself a lot of work to do something that might still be something that is very complicated, and even worse, still unsatisfying. So I guess instead of me just saying no, that this won't work, it's more like no, that's beyond my capability as an armchair designer, and I think I would need help. What makes layering work so well for Classic WoW is that it's very simple and easy to understand. Because from a player-facing standpoint, all you have to do is just make your character, log in, and that's it. Because with this kind of layering technology, you're still only going to see people from your realm. It's just that the world is a little bit more populated than you might see on the surface. A solution for modern WoW is out there somewhere, and it might be you that has this perfect solution. So I'd love to hear what you have to say in a comment below, your thoughts on layering and sharding and how this can possibly work with Classic and modern WoW. And otherwise, I'll see you next time. Of course, don't forget to like the video and to subscribe for more of this and all things Warcraft. And yeah, until then, stay safe, stay happy, and stay breezy.
In Vanilla WoW, there were a few items which had negative stats on them. Most of the time, the negative stats was just stamina, but a few of them gave negatives in other things as well. In this video, we'll talk about negative stats on items, why they exist in Vanilla, and why they didn't continue this trend going forward. Now, the biggest reason why Vanilla WoW had negative stats on items is because that was a classic RPG trope. It was very common for RPG games and fantasy stories to have corrupted or cursed items, which gave you powerful bonuses at some kind of drawback, with the most iconic one probably being the Ring of Power from The Lord of the Rings. In The Lord of the Rings, the One Ring gave you the ability to go invisible, but at the cost of slowly driving you mad, and a whole bunch of other negative side effects and benefits as well. So, negative stats on items, in which there is already negative effects on some powerful abilities, just made sense. Like, for example, the vanilla item Skull of Impending Doom. It was an offhand weapon that increased your run speed by 60% for 10 seconds, but at the cost of draining your health and mana while active. An item with a powerful effect that had a downside to it. So items with negative stats just seem like the natural conclusion to this fantasy trope. Like for example, the Shriveled Heart. It's a neck item which gives 13 stamina, but at the cost of negative 5 spirit and strength. If you're playing a class which doesn't need those two stats, that could be a decent stamina boost. Although that's not really a good example. You might be more familiar with the most famous item that had negative stats, known as the Corrupted Ashbringer. This item completely fits the trope of powerful items at a cost. The Ashbringer was one of the strongest weapons in the game, had a good on-use effect, and some extra effects out in the open world. Scarlet Crusade members would see you as friendly, all at the cost of negative 25 stamina on the weapon. And since this weapon was removed with the Wrath of the Lich King, it's one of the rarest weapons in the game. Other MMOs at the time also had gear with negative stats on them, including EverQuest, so no one really batted an eye at them at the time. But there might have been another reason why gear with negative stats existed. In the WoW Diary book, one of the vanilla WoW developers talks about how they had a philosophy of adding intentionally bad items to the game in order to make good items look much better in comparison. A very common practice done in card games to give the very strong cards better value when compared to all the intentionally bad cards. But it's not really something that happens very often in RPG video games. The book also talks about how they didn't really embrace this philosophy fully and just kind of dropped it eventually. So that could be a factor in why gear with negative stats existed, but it's much more likely the gear was just a homage to the corrupted or cursed item trope, which is very prevalent in RPG fantasy games, books, and movies. And if you take a look at items which have negative stats on them, this is a very easy conclusion to come to. So let's go over basically all of the negative stat items. For one, you have the Corrupted Ashbringer, which is pretty obvious. Even the Shriveled Heart could be seen as a cursed item, as you're gaining stats from someone else's body parts, which is taboo. The Ring of Scorn gave negative 3 spirit, and was a reward item from getting revenge on the guy who killed a Forsaken's wife. The Doomsayer's Robes had negative 10 stamina, and was a reward from the first part of the quest chain, which ultimately rewarded the Skull of Impending Doom, an item I talked about earlier, which drained your health and mana in order to run faster. Which thematically fits, as of course the Doomsayer Robes would give you negative stats as the whole quest chain was about getting a cursed item. The Cursed Eye of Palith was an offhand item which gave negative 3 stamina, and has cursed in its name, and is a reward from a quest chain that has to do with finding a cursed item. Corruption, a sword which gave negative 40 spirit, with corruption in its name. Cloak of Rot, which gave negative 5 stamina, and has rot in its name. The Black Widow Band was a ring item that gave negative stats for stamina, which is just a drop from a spider, and thematically, could easily be reasoned that you're gaining the plus 7 intellect at the cost of some of your health from like a spider bite or something. The Cowl of Necromancy is kind of in the similar vein, in that it has negative 4 stamina, but gives you 15 intellect on a level 31 item, and is related to necromancy, which is usually a dark art in most RPG games, including World of Warcraft. So as you can see, nearly all of the negative stat items are related to cursed, dark magic, or taboo items. So thematically, it makes sense why they all had negative stats. Of course, there were also a few negative stat items that didn't really fit this trope, like the Fletcher's Gloves, which were just a leatherworking crafted item that had negative 1% parry chance, but gave you an increased 1% crit chance with missile weapons, which was later changed to negative stamina stat instead of a negative parry chance. Although these gloves do kind of make sense thematically as well, giving up some of your defenses in order to have better attack power. But after Vanilla WoW, there were no more negative stat items added to the game, and then all of the negative stat items were removed in Cataclysm with the Old World revamp. So why didn't Blizzard continue the trend of cursed or corrupted items with negative stats? The answer to that is basically just how they did stats in Vanilla WoW in general. Stats in Vanilla WoW were completely different to how they were in, say, the Burning Crusade. Items didn't have haste rating, crit rating, dodge rating. Items would just straight up give you a 1% chance to crit a 1% chance to dodge, a 1% chance to hit, etc. It was in the Burning Crusade that they added the rating stat, which would add up to then give you maybe 1% chance to dodge or crit, once you got to an appropriate amount of that stat. Also, stamina used to be budgeted into an item's stats, along with all of the attack power increasing abilities. Today, stamina is just on pieces of gear alongside armor and your main stat boosts as your primary stats. And then a piece of gear will budget out your secondary stats, unrelated to the primaries. But in Vanilla WoW, there were no primary stats, and all of the stats were budgeted together, except for armor. So if something had stamina on it, that means it had less damaging stats, or healing stats, than a similar level piece of gear that didn't have stamina on it, as it was taking away some of that gear's budgeted stats for that stamina. So, some DPS classes could bring a set of glass cannon gear with no stamina on it that did a lot more damage. But with how raids and dungeons worked back then, that wasn't a good idea, as it meant you would die more often as well. And then there was a whole bunch of other secondary stats that don't even exist today. And that's how you have an environment in which negative stats were acceptable. Once stats started to be more streamlined and less random, where pieces of gear had main stats and then budgeted secondary stats, negative stats don't really fit into that format of gear. So if they wanted to add an item that had some kind of negative effect, it would just be added to a special weapon or item, like the trinket Whispers in the Dark, which was a haste trinket that gave you a really good haste proc for 12 seconds, but at the downside of after that proc ended, it would then decrease your haste for 8 seconds. And this trinket was released not too long ago in Legion, as it was a drop from Gul'dan in the Nighthold. So Blizzard is still willing to put out items that have negative effects. They've just kind of moved away from putting negative stats directly on pieces of equipment. And that's why negative stats was only a vanilla thing, and will most likely stay a vanilla thing.
With the law on our side, we can rule this land with pride. Keep them in your mind and heart, else from us they surely part. They seem like us in many ways, different moods for different days. Some can be a bit capricious, others be downright malicious. This world to them can be so small, their vision long, much to recall. There's parts we can't understand, yet all part of their master plan. Wisdom, strength, and power. Day with us in our darkest hour. For them all, we must endeavor. Call to the heavens and Allah forever.
Hi, I'm Hazel, and today we're looking at all of the new mounts on the 8.2 PTR so far and a rough idea of where you'll be getting them. This is just what's actually in the mount journal, so these are the most likely to make it into the game. I'm not digging much into data mining yet because my heart can't take the disappointment. First, the Wonder Wing 2.0. You'll get this glorious golden parrot when you earn your BFA Pathfinder Part 2 and unlock flying in BFA zones. So far, all you need for Part 2 is Revered with the Mechagon and Najatar rep. It should be pretty quick. If you don't have BFA Pathfinder Part 1 yet, Wowhead has an attunement checker tool that can tell you what you still need to do. Next, the Zhuolag ATV. This is a crafted mount that's split between two professions. Blacksmiths will make a chassis, engineers make an engine, and slapping them together gives you this. The Child of Torkali is the final reward of that green baby direhorn quest that the Horde have been doing. In 8.2, the last legs of that are being added along with the How to Train Your Direhorn achievement, which will reward the mount. Horde characters can finally see their baby grow up. The Onyx War Hyena is a slightly mysterious one. Obviously, this comes from rated PvP, but it's not a vicious mount, and it's not an honor level mount, and it's not a glad mount. Exactly how you'll get this is unclear so far. I'm kind of hoping that it's a freebie for your first win to just kind of get people in the door of rated PvP. That's just a guess, though. Next, the 6 zone reps of BFA are getting a new flying mount each, available at Exalted for a whole bunch of gold. Alliance factions get armored griffins. The Stormsong Coast Watcher is for Storm's Wake. The Proudmoor Sea Scout is Proudmoor Admiralty, and the Dusky Waycrest Griffin is from the Order of the Embers. Coming in at 90k gold each, this is a big, thick and probably unpopular gold zinc. These are not new models. For the Horde, you get Terra Wings. The captured Swamp Stalker is from Talon-G's Expedition, the Voldeni Dunescraper is obviously Voldeni, and the Zandalari Empire gets the Spectral Terra Wing, which at least has the decency to be a little unique. Someone probably wants that. Next, let's dig through the Mechagon mounts. The X995 Mechano-Cat is something you can craft with tinkering at Pascal in Mechagon. It's basically a questline and some material farming. It may look kinda plain like this, but you can actually paint your Mechano-Cat. Different colored paint sprays will drop from all sorts of Mechagon activities, and you can use those to spice up your Mecha-Kitty. The Rust Bolt Resistor is, fittingly enough, the Rust Bolt Resistance rep mount. Right now on the PTR, it costs an awful lot of gold. That could change, but it also might not. If your pockets aren't deep enough for that one, you can try for the Aerial Unit R21X. That one drops from King Mechagon, the last boss in the Operation Mechagon dungeon. It apparently comes with foot warmers, so I vote for this one. While you're in the dungeon, keep an eye out for the Mechagon Peacekeeper drop. Same colors, fresh mecha spider tank look. Another color of spider tank is available from a Mechagon quest. The Scrap Forged Mecha Spider is something that you can build through what I hear is a fairly long and involved journey. Worth it though. And yet another color is the Rusty Mechano Crawler for fans of the dingy aesthetic. This one is just listed as a Mechagon drop, and it's been reported to drop from the Arachnoid Harvester rare out there. There could be more sources, but definitely at least that one. Next, the Mecha Cycle Model W. This is the wheel. You sit inside it, it spins around you, and it is everything that you want it to be. This one is rewarded from the Mechagon Meta Achievement, which is going to have you doing all kinds of tinkery stuff out in the outdoor Mechagon zone. Expect this to take a while, and you're gonna do it anyways, because look at it. The Junk Heap Drifter is another wheel color, and this one drops from the rare mob Rust Feather out in Mechagon. The thing that I really like about the wheel mounts is that they're very narrow, so you know precisely where you're going. As much as I love a good hippo mount, they can feel a little iffy when you're trying to tightrope around some trash or get onto the boat in Borealis. So, with the Mechagon mounts out of the way, let's check out what we'll be finding in Najitar. The Unshackled Wave Ray is a Horde rep mount on the new Unshackled Reputation. These are obviously reminiscent of the Argus Mana Rays, but I love them so much more because they look like real animals. The Ancoan Wave Ray is the Alliance version on the Ancoan rep bender. In my opinion, this is the best color scheme for them, and I need it immediately. I give it strong odds that these are flying and not only underwater mounts, but I can't know that for sure yet. The Asharia Bloat Ray is, in my opinion, the ugliest color scheme of Ray. If you're after the Manta Ray that wanted to be a banana when it grew up, here you go! This one is from the Glory of the Eternal Raider, which is the meta achievement for the Asharia's Palace Raid. The fourth Ray color is the Silent Glider, which drops from the Soundless Rare out in Najitar. We'll see how rare that is. Next, the Snapback Scuttler is our crab mount, but not just any crab mount. This one walks sideways like an actual crab. Obviously, you're still going forward and the crab is just facing to the side, but it's cool anyways. This is listed as Zone Najitar, which could mean that it's a world drop out there. Maybe. Next, we have three Snapdragons, which supposedly have something to do with some kind of Warcraft Naga unit. I missed that era myself, but you don't need to be a Warcraft buff to want a Naga mermaid dog thing. The Royal Snapdragon is another Zone Najitar source, while the Deep Coral Snapdragon and Snapdragon Kelpstalker colors are from Najitar quests. The Tide Stallions are next, and we have three of them. The Inkscale Deepseeker is from Najitar Battle Commendations, which sound like a new version of a service medal. We'll get back to you on that once Najitar opens on PTR. The Crimson Tide Stallion does not have a listed source yet, but Fabius will drop from Fabius, a Najitar rare. These are gorgeous, but they are almost certainly underwater-only mounts. I will get excited about these on the day that they go as fast as my underlight angler shark. I have hope. Notably missing from this list is the B mount. There is no B mount in the mount journal of the 8.2 PTR yet. That doesn't mean it's not coming. There have been hints of a B-related reputation buried in the data for 8.2, so don't lose faith just yet. So, those are the new 8.2 mounts so far. If I'm picking a favorite, it's the Ancoan Wave Ray, assuming that it can fly. Let me know what you're excited to get down in the comments. Thank you for watching, and have a wonderful, wonderful day. Bye!
Hello, everyone. Bane Bloodhoof has been given a much more prominent role within Battle for Azeroth, so I really want to cover his story so far, but while we're at it, to have a little bit of a foundation to work on, we're going to cover first the Tarn history and the story of his father, Cairn. Now, the Tarn's origin, that goes way back to a time when they were known as the Yungul. They roamed the grassy plains of Kalimdor, came into contact with the demigod Cenarius, but sharing the hunting grounds with the trolls, it had to migrate elsewhere. Despite Cenarius trying to convince them to stay and make peace with the trolls, they still decided to move away in search of new territory. This placed them on a path that would bring great misery to their people. They came into contact with the Mogu, who enslaved them, and for generations they were oppressed. They were forced to do the Mogu's bidding, but in time they found the strength to fight back and regained their freedom. With it, some of them decided to stay in this area. They remained to be Yungul. Some of them went further up to the cold north. They became the Tonka. While others, they returned to the ancestor hunting grounds in central Kalimdor, which allowed them to reconnect with Cenarius and rediscover their ancient traditions. Those who studied with the demigod, they learned the druidic magic of the natural world. While others, they decided to master the path of shamanism. Now, being in central Kalimdor, it did mean that they were close to the Well of Eternity. This is a great fount of power, which over time, it warped them into what we know as the Tauren. The Yungul, Tonka and Tauren, they stayed in contact with one another. But when the War of the Ancients played out, a war in which the Tauren bravely fought with, the end result, it left the well destroyed and the land of Kalimdor split apart. From that time, all connections between the tribes was lost. But for the path of the Tauren, it meant a nomadic lifestyle, exploring and living off the land now so massively changed. They wandered Kalimdor's lush forests, living in harmony with nature and the elements. Their journey, it took them an area that they called Mashanchi, or the Loom of the Earth Mother, named by the Tauren in honor of the mythical deity who they believed had created the world. Her eyes are called Anshi, which is the sun, and Musha, which is the moon, were commonly known as Alun. In this area, drawn by faint elemental whisperings, the Tauren shaman grew convinced that the Earth Mother herself dwelt somewhere beneath the meadows. They spent decades attempting to wake her up by communing with the region's elementals and conducting celebratory rituals. The shamans eventually did succeed, but they soon discovered that the whisper that they had heard, it did not come from the benevolent Earth Mother. They were echoes of something far darker, something from Azeroth's violent elemental past. It was Princess Feradras. She had been hiding, slumbering beneath the world. The shaman's mistake of awakening her, it not only meant massive destruction to this sacred land of theirs, but also the creation of an enemy that would haunt them for millennia to come. Feradras and Zaytar, son of Cenarius, they fell in love with one another. From their communion was born a race known as the Centaur. They quickly grew their numbers, and they fanned out across what we know today as Desolace. They unleashed their wrath on the hapless Tauren who inhabited the area, forcing them to abandon their homes. Yet Feradras's barbarous children did not stop in Desolace. In the centuries that followed, marauding bands of Centaur, they would hunt down Kalimdor's Tauren, igniting a long and dark period of war between the two races. So fast forward to the time period of Warcraft 3, and we can see that the Tauren and the Centaur, they're still going at it. We also see Jaina Proudmoore and Warchief Vral follow the words of Medivh, guiding them to the ancient lands of Kalimdor to prepare for the war against the Legion. While searching in a very strange land, Vral finds himself in the middle of a different war.
The horsemen look as if they're dressed for war. Well met, warrior. Has there been any sign of...
The horsemen are charging! Defend yourselves!
Luktar! Luktar! Yes. I am Cairn, chief of the Bloodhoof Tauren. You greenskins fight with both savagery and valor. I am intrigued.
I am Thrall, and these are my brethren, the orcs. We've come seeking the destiny promised to us.
Seeking destiny? It will find you in time, young one. However, there is an oracle far to the north which might be able to...
North? But there's an army of the horsemen marching north.
What? No. My village is in danger.
I must know more about this oracle.
follow them. Protect Cairn at all costs.
A chance meeting would change everything for Thrall and Cairn, the chieftain of the Bloodhoof Tauren. He's a son called Bane and a life mate called Tamala, who by this point sadly is already deceased. Not much is known about Cairn's youth, his time of becoming a chieftain. So instead, let's focus on the here and now. The Tauren, they have noble hearts and yearn for a better future, but they're constantly drawn into a bloody conflict with the Centaur. Thrall would not ignore the injustice he was witnessing. His horde stood as a beacon of hope for races, just like the Tauren, the misunderstood, the oppressed, and the forgotten. And his horde would fight to protect those in need. Shoulder to shoulder, they stand with the Tauren in battle. Their combined might, it crashes down on the Centaur warbands like a hammer and scatters them to the wind. This defeat, it shocks the Centaur and sends them limping out of the Barrens in disgrace. They would never again see the Tauren as easy prey. Now, for the first time in memory, the Tauren saw the promise of a new future. The Centaur would always remain a threat, but not as much as they had been. From that point on, the Tauren's nomadic existence was over. At last, they had broken the cycle of conflict. In the wake of the battle, Cairn offered Thrall supplies, even some of his mightiest warriors to help the Horde reach Stonestella Peak in the north, to reach this so-called Oracle, which turned out to be Medivh. Most of the other Tauren ventured west into a grassy plain known as Milgor. There, they would finally settle and build a permanent home, Thunderbluff, it would be known as. But while that was being built up, Cairn realized that the debts to the orcs, it was great, and he offered to help Thrall further. Help him with reaching the Oracle. Help him save Grom Hellscream, lost the demonic blood, which resulted in the liberation of all the orcs. His forces also helped Thrall stand up against Archimonde and the Legion, which saved the world from the demonic threat. A bond forged in Hellfire. Upon Archimonde's defeat, Thrall decided to build up Orgrimmar, whereas Jaina Proudmoore, she took the survivors and they settled in Feramor to keep some sort of peace going between their factions. Humans and orcs, alliance and horde working together. It was somewhat unheard of during these days, something that Jaina's father simply couldn't understand. He still saw the Horde of old, and he wanted to take care of this threat, despite what his daughter might say. So it was that Thrall had Rexxar investigate what was going on, rallying the Horde to stop Jaina's father. During this quest, Rexxar gathered Thrall's allies, but Cairn was not exactly acting like himself.
I am Cairn, but I can be of help to no one. Return to your war chief and tell him that I am dead. Just as my heart is dead,
the barbarous Centaur attacked our village recently. Our chieftain's only son, Bane, was taken captive. The Centaur are cannibals and do not keep prisoners for long. We searched everywhere for a sign that Bane was still alive, but we found no trace of him.
Where the Tauren failed, Rexxar succeeded. He tracked down the son of Cairn, which actually looks like a mini Cairn in Warcraft 3. So adorable, he saved him from the Centaur.
Don't worry, Bane. We'll have you back to your father in no time.
Bane, my son. I thought I'd lost you forever. I was an old fool to despair. Rexxar! By returning my son to me, you have given me new life. For that, I will ever be grateful. Now, you said that your war chief was in trouble, that the Horde needed the Tauren once again. Well, Thrall did much for us in his time, and we will not fail him.
And Cairn kept that promise, not only in the battle against Jaina's father, saving the tenuous peace between their factions, but also as a close advisor to Thrall. When Sylvanas Windrunner reached out in search of allies, it was the Tauren, specifically Hamul Runetotem, that gave her the first sign of hope. Hamul looked past the undead's master's exterior and believed that they could be redeemed and revived, perhaps not physically, but at least spiritually. He brought the Forsaken Ambassadors to meet with Cairn Bloodhoof, and Cairn agreed that the undead, they should be given a chance to thrive. Thrall also had sympathy for her followers. The orcs had once been corrupted, and it had been a hard legacy to overcome, but he also recognized the strategic value of the Forsaken. After all, they lived in the ruins of Lordaeron. This city would be a valuable foothold within the Eastern Kingdoms, should the Alliance ever provoke war again. The Horde also needed to find every ally it could find to protect his lands from threats like the Lich King. After much consideration, Thrall made his decision. The Forsaken were allowed into the Horde. And in turn, it was Sylvanas that set up the meeting for Lorfmar and the Blood Elves to join. Throwing Cairn, they saw great promise in the Blood Elves. The people of Quel'Thalas, they proved their courage and resolve while fighting to protect the kingdom from outside threats like the Scourge. Throwing Cairn also believed that the Horde and the Blood Elves needed each other to survive the days ahead. They extended a hand of peace to Lorthmar, and he accepted. This alliance, it benefited both sides. While the Blood Elves now had allies to call upon, the Horde gained another strategic foothold within the Eastern Kingdoms. Throwing Cairn also saw helping the Blood Elves as an act of honor. Much like the other races of the Horde, they were a people on the verge of extinction. Constant war and addiction to magic, it had chipped away at their pride and once glorious culture. Throwing Cairn believed that they could help the Blood Elves find peace. A quest that would take them to Outland, a world once known as Draenor, the homeworld of the Orcs. Throw finally returned home. There he came into contact with Garrosh Hellscream, the son of Gromar's Hellscream, and he saw great promise. So much so that he allowed Garrosh to come with him through the dark portal into Azeroth, and during a campaign against the Lich King, he made quite a name for himself. A hero amongst the Horde, but just before Deathwing broke out of the world and started the Cataclysm, the world already could sense that something wasn't quite right. Thrall decided to return to Outland to see if he could learn more about what was happening. This is a path that eventually would lead to Thrall becoming Goel, the Uber Shaman at the end of the Cataclysm, but in this moment, he couldn't just leave the Horde without a leader. Again, he saw great promise in Garrosh, and he decided to appoint him as the acting warchief, a choice that not all of his advisors agreed with. Cairn especially argued against passing control of the Horde to Hellscream. Under the skull of Manaroth, he and Thrall spoke. I am here, in the shadow of what was once your greatest enemy, for a reason. I remember Grom Hellscream. I remember his passion, and his violence, and his waywardness. I remember the harm he once did. He may have died a hero's death by slaying Manaroth. I am the first to acknowledge that. But by all accounts, even your own, he took many lives and gloried in the doing. He had a thirst for blood, for violence, and he quenched that thirst with the blood of innocence. You were right to tell Garrosh of his father's heroism. It is true. But it's also true that there were less savory things Grom Hellscream did, and his son needs to know these things as well. I stand here to ask you to remember these things too, the dark and the bright, and to acknowledge that Garrosh is his father's son. There are things that I respect and admire about him, Thrall. Mistake me not, but he is not fit to lead the Horde any more than Grom was. Not without you to check him when he overreaches, and especially not now when things are yet so tenuous with the Alliance. Cairn, it won't be for very long. That does not matter. The child does not have the temperament to be the leader you are. Or should I say, you were. For the Thrall I knew, who befriended the Tauren and helped him so greatly, would not have blithely handed over the Horde he restored to a young pup still wet behind the ears. Thrall's jaw tightened, and he felt anger growing within him. Cairn had set his great hoof squarely on Thrall's own worries. Worries that he could not shake. Yet he knew there was literally no other choice. No one else could take on the responsibility. It had to be Garrosh. You are one of my oldest friends in this land, Cairn Bloodhoof. Thrall said, his voice dangerously quiet. You know I respect you, but the decision is made. If you are concerned about Garrosh's immaturity, then guide him as I have asked you. Give him the benefit of your vast wisdom and common sense. I need you with me on this one, Cairn. I need your support, not your disapproval. Your cool head to keep Garrosh calm, not your censure to incite him. You ask me for wisdom and common sense. I have but one answer for you. Do not give Garrosh this power. Do not turn your back on your people and give them only this arrogant blusterer to guide them. That is my wisdom, Thrall. Wisdom of many years, bought with blood and suffering and battle. Thrall stiffened. This was the absolute last thing he had wanted. But it had happened, and when he spoke, his voice was cold. Then we have nothing more to say to one another. My decision is final. Garrosh will lead the Horde in my absence. But it's up to you as to whether you will advise him in that role, or let the Horde pay the price for your stubbornness. Without another word, Thrall turned and strode off into the darkness of the sultry Orgrimmar night. He half expected Cairn to come after him, but the old bull did not follow. His heart was heavy as he retrieved the wyvern, slung the sack across his saddle, and mounted. Cairn stared after his old friend. Never had he thought that it would come to this. An argument over something that was so obviously a mistake. He knew Thrall saw it too, but for whatever reasons, the orc felt it necessary to persist in this course of action. The parting words wounded Cairn. He had not expected Thrall to dismiss his concerns so quickly and so thoroughly. There was virtue in the boy, Cairn had seen it, but the recklessness, the deaf ear he turned to sound advice, the burning need for acknowledgement and accolades. Cairn flicked his tail, the thoughts agitating him. These were qualities that needed tempering. And of course, Cairn would be there. His words would be ignored, doubtless, but he would offer them. He looked up against Manaroth's skull, gazing into the shadowed eye sockets. Grum, if your spirit lingers, help us guide your son. You sacrifice yourself for the hordes. I know you would not wish to see your son destroy it. There was no response. If Grum was indeed here, lingering beside the great evil he had destroyed, he was providing no answers. Cairn was on his own. The old bull did his best to change Thrall's mind, but with little success. Cairn and Garrosh, they'd hung out a little bit in Northrend. He had seen the good in the orc, but he also noticed a shadow. Now taking on a mantle of leadership, it only encouraged Garrosh to indulge in his warlike ways. He believed the Horde was being too timid. Resources were scarce, especially after the war in Northrend. The elemental turmoil engulfing the world had only made it worse. Why should they ask and negotiate when they can just take? He set his eyes on Eschenville to take their land and resources, which enraged the Alliance. Open war seemed inevitable. Now some of the Horde members, they welcomed these bold and aggressive maneuvers, but Cairn obviously did not. The Elder Torrin did everything he could to reason with the acting warchief and prevent this bloodshed. In Cairn's eyes, Garrosh was leading the Horde down a dangerous path, one that would inevitably destroy it. The warchief did not listen to his counsel and wisdom. And so, Cairn spoke the only language that the orc would understand. He challenged Garrosh to a makkora, a ritualistic duel.
Garrosh, you are not fit to rule the Horde.
As was custom, a shaman would bless the warrior's weapon before battle. And Magatha Grimtotem, commander of the Grimtotem tribe, she offered to bless the legendary Gorhal. In the past, she and Cairn had often sparred over the direction of the Tarn's future. A keep your friends close, but your enemies closer kind of deal. Now Cairn, he did notice that Magatha had blessed Gorhal, but he wrote it off as she proclaiming her real loyalties. Once all was said and done, he would have to exile her and the Grimtotem for Thunderbluff. Unless they would swear their loyalties to the Horde. But first, there was a battle to win. The future of the Horde at stake. On the one side, there was blood and conquest. The other, there was peace. Cairn stood his ground, letting the youth run towards him, ex-aloft. Garrosh whirled the mighty Gorhal over his head. At the last moment, with a grace that belied his bulk, the Tauren moved aside and let Garrosh's own speed propel him harmlessly past. The orc tried to halt his forward movement and almost succeeded. But not before Cairn had brought up the spear and plunged it into Garrosh's right bicep. Garrosh cried out in surprise, affront and pain. His grip on the weapon loosened. Cairn lowered his horned head and rammed it into the wounds, knocking Garrosh off his feet and causing him to nearly lose his grip on the weapon. If he had, all would have been lost for the orc. Once a weapon was dropped, the rules clearly stated that it could not be retrieved by either party. Cairn raised the rune spear and plunged it straight down. Garrosh rolled to the side at the last minute. The spear sliced a furrow down the orc's side and emptied itself into the earth of the arena. Cairn lost a precious second, wrestling it free. And by then, Garrosh was on his feet. Garrosh, the most highly acclaimed warrior of the Horde, had nearly lost his weapon, and Cairn had drawn first blood.
Well played, old bull. Garrosh said, panting just a little. I admit, I underestimated your speed. It would seem that it's just your wits that are slow.
Your jeers were not that clever to begin with, and less so now, son of Hellscream. Cairn replied, never taking his eyes off his opponent. Save your breath for battle, and I will save mine to speak well of you at your funeral. It was almost too easy to enrage Garrosh, Cairn thought. The orc's heavy brow furrowed in offense, and with a growl he charged. He swung Gorhal skillfully, and Cairn felt the rush of air, heard the weapon's angry song as he barely dodged the blow. Garrosh was not a fool. He learned from his mistakes. He would not underestimate Cairn a second time. The bull lowered his head, pawing the earth with his right hoof, and he charged. Garrosh shrieked the war cry and lifted his axe to slice the bull in the throat. At the very last instant, however, Cairn halted, veered to the left, and thrust out with his spear towards Garrus' exposed torso. The orc's eyes widened. He had just enough time to turn slightly so that his right shoulder met the spear's bite instead of his chest. The blow was dangerous, but not the killing blow would have been otherwise. Even so, with a wound to his right bicep and now to the same shoulder, Garrus' arm was badly weakened. Garrus cried out in pain and in fury, his free hand clapping over the wound while his other hand clutched Gorhal. Cairn pulled the spear free and felt the faintest twinge of pity. Garrus' death would be a loss to the horde of a fine warrior if nothing else. If only Thrall had not appointed the younger orc as their leader, this tragic necessity could have been so easily avoided. In this brief hesitation, it enabled Garrus to almost impossibly have the two-handed axe with his badly wounded arm. Quickly, Cairn grasped the rune spear with both hands, holding it up to block the blow. Strong and sturdy, the ancient weapon had witnessed countless battles, and Cairn had used it to block such a manner before. Gorhal shrieked his eerie cries as it descended. The rune spear, the weapon of 20 generations, the pride of the Bloodhoof, which had slain so many and the defender that harmed people so well, shattered into pieces. Its force slowed, but not stopped. Gorhal bit into Cairn's chest, slicing a shallow groove in his fur and flesh, continuing onward to cut his arm. The strike was merely a flesh wound. The spear had stayed the worst of the blow. Cairn recovered from the horror of seeing the ancestral weapon destroyed, but he was not yet done. His hand tightened around the lower fur of the spear. Its single tooth could still bite. Garrus was still fighting, but he was badly wounded. The blow that had shattered the rune spear had drained him, and it would not last much longer. And one good thrust with the remnants of the spear would. Cairn blinked. His vision was blurring. Had he gotten dust or sweat or blood in his eyes? He took a precious second to wipe the back of his hand across his eyes, but it aided nothing. His hand shook as he lowered it, and his legs, they felt weak. Stunned, he stared at Garrus. The orc was sweating profusely and breathing hard. As Cairn watched, Garrus gripped the axe and met Cairn's gaze. Cairn clutched his own weapon. It weaved in his hands. It felt so strangely heavy. And then he knew exactly what had happened to him. And so I, who have lived my whole life with honor, die betrayed. He could not even cry out with his last breath to accuse his murderer. It was through an act of sheer will that he was able to even hold on to the shattered spear so that he would not be struck down unarmed. Garrus' eyes narrowed as he beheld the furrow he had carved in Cairn's chest and the piece of the rune spear lying on the earth. For a moment, surprise flitted across his features. Then he set his jaws in determination. He began running towards his opponents, lifting Gorhal in both hands and bringing it down. Unable to deflect the blow or move out of its path, his life fading with every heartbeat, Cairn Bloodhoof, High Chieftain of the Tauren, mutely watched it descend. And so, the story of the Bloodhoof Chieftain, honored and respected by so many, even by Garrus himself, was ended. MacGuffa Grimtotem had been lusting after ruling Thunderbluff for quite some time now. With the Makura, she saw the opportunity, and she poisoned Gorhal. The Grimtoners make ready to assault Thunderbluff at night, but the blood of legacy, it still lives on. Cairn Sunbane is still alive and will now have to push past his grief for the sake of his people. But the story of Bane, that's what we're going to say for next week. So for now, thank you very much for watching, everyone. Subscribe if you like my videos, leave a like if you enjoyed this one. And until next time, guys. See ya!
I hope you have enjoyed your time with the Forsaken of Corpse Run Radio this episode. Should you have an idea for a little segment of your own, I would love for you to become part of the cast. Or if you are a creator of Warcraft original or parody music and would like to be featured on the show, contact us at corpserunradiomail@gmail.com. or on Twitter at Corpserun Radio. We also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/CorpserunRadio. Contact information for our contributors is available on our website, crr.podbean.com, along with the links for the segments played on the episode and other information. Corpserun Radio is a non-profit fan podcast. All segments, music, and sound effects are used with permission.
Thank you for listening. Now go out, my minions. Let nothing stand in your way. Until next time.
Thanks for listening. See you. Until we meet again.